Please go ahead. The conference call is now being recorded.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Craig Schwartz again from ICANN staff, and thank you for participating on this Friday morning here in D.C. and late evening for Wang in China.
Hello.
What I'd like to do is dive right into the agenda, which everybody hopefully should have. Starting with item number one, which is administration, and what I'll do is start with a roll call. Mike O'Connor.
Here.
Thanks, Mike. John Levine. Nacho Amadeus.
Hello.
Hi, Nacho. Michael Pelage. You know, I don't think Michael's actually going to be on this group. This may be a confusion with the other advisory group list. Adam Palmer. David Maher. Vladimir.
I'm here.
Hi, Vladimir. Brian Cute. Tom Barrett. Paul Sahura. Rick Wilhelm.
Not here.
Thanks, Rick. James Bladel.
Here.
Thanks, James. Tatiana. Rod Rasmussen.
I am here.
Thanks, Rod. Rod Dixon. Joe St. Sauve.
This is Joe.
Thanks, Joe. Wang Wei.
Hi, I'm here.
Wang. John Christoph. How about Jonathan Frakes?
Present.
Thanks, Jonathan. How about Teresa Lopes? What about Asif Kabani? And Barry Cobb.
Present.
Thanks, Barry. And then from ICANN staff, we obviously have myself, Dave Piscatello.
Here.
We have Kurt Pritz as well. Francisco Arias.
I'm here.
Kim Davies, are you with us this morning? What about Mark McFadden?
I'm here.
Great. Thanks, all. So moving on to item number 1.2 is review and amend the agenda. And I think the agenda moves, the agenda speaks pretty clearly for itself. I would like to add probably an item 4 and then shift the item 4 that we have down a notch. I'd like to add a new item 4, which is the paper that Rod circulated to the group a little bit earlier this week, and just spend a little bit of time having Rod walk us through some of the highlights of that and what we might like to do with that paper. So if there's no opposition to that, I'll just make that shift to the agenda. Are there any other comments about the agenda itself? Great. Moving on to the review of the open action items list. And this is something that Mark McFadden pulled together, and we'll do this on a weekly basis. And some of these items we'll go through pretty quickly because they're already done, and others we may want to spend a few moments discussing, but I'll go through them. They're on the second page of the agenda. The first one is establish whether or not to close the advisory group and its communications. And so I think at some point we do need to cut off new people joining simply to avoid having to reset every conversation that we've had to bring new folks up to speed. And I would recommend that we stop adding people probably by the January 20th meeting, which is in 2 weeks. Is everyone comfortable with that? Hearing silence, that means acceptance in the ICANN world. Item number 2, should we establish an open action items list to be reviewed early in the agenda each meeting? I think it's probably a good idea, and is there anyone who opposes this idea? Great. Moving on to number three, articulation of a crisp problem statement for the Zone File Access Advisory Group, and that is actually item number two on our agenda, so we'll get to that in a little bit. Should we publish notes to the meetings? My personal opinion on this is that if we are establishing an open action items list that we can share amongst ourselves each week, and we do have the MP3 recording and can choose to share it when we feel it's appropriate, I don't know that we actually need to develop a set of separate notes to publish, but I'm certainly open to, and the group is open to feedback that folks on the phone might have to add here. No strong feeling about notes. Should a public comment summary be produced? And that will come out of the overall summary and analysis of the applicant guidebook version 3 that is currently in production. That is the summary and analysis currently in production. And Kurt, are you on the phone right now still?
Yes, I am.
Do you have, what's your sense of when the applicant guidebook version 3 summary and analysis will get posted?
Probably pretty close to February 15th.
Okay. Thanks.
Is there a reason for doing it sooner, or what are you interested in?
I don't know that there's a reason for doing it sooner, but we talked about looking at what the public comments specifically were on Zone File Access, and we actually covered this a bit in the first call, that a majority of the comments were favorable and that the registry stakeholder group had submitted some comments and raised some concerns that we'll get to actually a little bit later in today's agenda.
Yeah, so the comment summaries are done, but the analysis isn't done. So we could easily share with this group the summary of those comments, if that's helpful.
Okay.
It certainly is, yeah.
That was...
That's Jonathan.
Hi, Jonathan. Okay, I'll follow up with Kurt or the right person on his team about that.
Yeah, so I can get those to you, and you can just parse out those comments. They're probably under a separate heading. Okay, thanks, Kurt.
Thank you. So item number six on the open items list is the start of an outline for pre-Nairobi concept paper. And so we will, this is obviously something that we're going to start. I think it will probably start to come together in... following this call or the next call, once we get through the concerns and the information that Rod has presented in his paper, I think that that'll probably give us a good basis for the beginnings of a concept paper. Item number seven is the mechanics, the Linux drivers for Adobe Connect. I think someone on the last call, and it was either on this group or in the other advisory group, was having a problem with Adobe and Linux. What I would say is if you're still having issues, and we're actually not going to use Adobe today, but if you did have issues last week, if you would email me separately, we'll get you in touch with someone from the ICANN IT department who can provide you some assistance around this. I'm definitely not an IT guy, but I know that there's some issues, and we're happy to help where we can.
I think that was John Christoff, if my recollection is.
Hey, how are you?
I could be wrong.
Thanks, Rick. I'll follow up with John about that. Item number eight is putting Rod's presentation on the Zone File Access webpage, and that's already been done. And item number nine is the data collection question, and that'll actually be item number five on today's agenda. So... moving on to item 1.4 on the agenda, which is the selection of co-chairs. I'm sure all of you have been monitoring the list that's been the Zone File Access list and know full well that Rod Rasmussen and James Bladel have stepped up to be co-chairs of the group, and we definitely appreciate their support. You'll also, and I don't know, James, if you wrote this email to the list or you just sent it to me personally, but understanding the registry operators voiced concerns about this program, it seems like it would be a good idea to have a registry operator person co-chairing, serving as one of the co-chairs of the group. And James has generously agreed to step aside if one of the registry operators would like to step up and serve as co-chair. So I sent all of the registry operators an advance note that I was going to speak about this on stage. And so I'm wondering, are there any of the existing registry operators that would like to step up and serve along with Rod on moving forward the work of this group?
Hey, Craig, I'm not sure if everybody else is hearing it, but somebody has a lot of background noise on their connection.
Okay. Yeah, folks, if you're actually not speaking up, could you mute so? Could you mute your phone? Thanks. So I don't know if everybody clearly heard my call for a registry operator to step up and work alongside Rod in co-chairing this advisory group. And if it's a discussion that you want to have, you know, either right now on the phone or following the call, we can certainly do that.
Well, so Craig, I'm assuming you're saying an incumbent, like an existing DTLD registry?
Yeah, I am saying that simply because of the detailed comments that they submitted during the public comment period on Zone File Access, which is not to say that someone else with registry operator experience couldn't also, you know, serve in that same role.
Okay, right. Didn't mean anything by the question, just a clarification. Yeah.
Okay, well, perhaps there'll be additional conversation about that either offline or after the call, so I'm going to move on to...
Craig, this is James. Are there any registry operators or zone data producers on this particular call now, or did you receive any response from your call for volunteers?
Call for volunteers... went out literally just 45 minutes ago. So on the phone, we have Vladimir, who's from Telnik, on the phone, and we have Nacho Amados from .cat on the phone. And those are, you know, those are the only, you know, existing or current registry operators with us now. You know, Phileas and PIR are also supposed to be part of the call, and they're not here today. So I don't know that we ought to spend a whole lot of time on this. If we don't get some feedback, you know, in the next couple of days, then I would suggest that we move forward with Rod and with...
Yes, Craig, this is Vladimir. I would really like to discuss it with Phileas and PIR before we move on this. So if we could take another couple of days, that would be better.
I'm open to that. Anyone... not comfortable with that approach?
No, hi, Craig. This is Nacho. I'm completely comfortable because it would be great to talk with the guys at Phileas at PIR before.
Okay. So that's what we'll do. Moving on to item 1.5, which are the ground rules, this organizational discussion. Last week's call, or on the kickoff call, which is actually back in December, we talked about their... sometimes being a discussion of maybe sensitive materials that we didn't necessarily want to make public, either in notes or via the MP3 recording. And the first item that I can't took away from the call was to have a discussion with our general counsel's office about how to handle that. And Mark McFadden, Dave Piscatello, and I did meet with Dan Halloran, who's our deputy general counsel, several weeks ago about how to handle this. And his counsel to us is that, you know, we can make whatever information we'd like to make available to the public. You know, we don't work the same way ESSAC does, which is why we don't necessarily need a disclaimer on our webpage the way ESSAC does, and the fact that they publish probably not a whole lot of information because of the nature of it. And if I'm getting that wrong, I'm going to ask Dave Piscatello to chime in simply because I don't want to mistake what ESSAC does or doesn't do. But I think the outcome from the conversation with Dan is that we have liberty with what we make public and what we don't. If there are points or agenda items that are sensitive that we might not want on the recording, we could leave those for the end of every agenda and just stop the recording at some point. And that would enable us to make the MP3 recording available on the, you know, the more generic information, and then not be making the sensitive or the concerned data or information available to the public. So I don't know that we probably need to spend a lot more time on that. I would like to open the floor to comments from anyone who's on the line today, though.
This is Rod speaking. I think that approach will work as long as we have some sort of mechanics for figuring out if there's a part that we're starting to during our regular conversation that we think should be, you know, put into that silent period, I guess you would call it, because of the sensitive nature of it. Just so there's some sort of mechanical, you know, procedure to use that we know about.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that one's going to take a little bit to figure out, but we will. Any other comments on that particular item?
Hey, Craig, it's Jothan.
Hi, Jothan.
So I've worked in other security groups where if they do have some sort of a public part of a call or a conference where they record, they take and they have a segment at the front end before the recording to cover material like that, sort of a pre-call. So if schedules allowed, you know, we could do a segment 10 or 15 minutes prior to the normal start time to cover any material that might be sensitive. It's a suggestion.
Okay. Great. So based upon that and the kickoff call that we had, I re-listened to the MP3 recording. I didn't find anything particularly sensitive in that conversation. And unless there are any objections, I would like to go ahead and post that MP3 recording to the information page. Okay. Item 1.6 is a discussion and timeline of potential deliverables, and we'll get to that in a little bit. One more administrative item before we move on to item number 2, and that is to please remember to submit your statement of interest using the format that was provided a couple of days ago. If you could have your statement of interest in by the 13th of January, that is appreciated, and then once we have them all together, we'll post them on the information page on the website. So moving on to item number 2 in the agenda, which is the problem statement discussion. What came up in the kickoff call was the need to, you know, articulate the problem and what it is we're trying to do. So the problem statement is provided for you here in item number 2. And I'm just going to read it out loud. The current model for zone file access is built on individual bilateral agreements between consumers and providers of data. This is not scalable in an environment where there are many consumers and providers. What is needed is a new model for zone file access that can scale in both the current environment and in an environment including new GTLDs. Any new model for zone file access must be resilient and defend against abuse through both administrative and technological means. So I'd like to open up the floor to a discussion about the problem statement and then tweak it as necessary and appropriate and say that we've defined the problem, we're ready to move on to the next item. So the floor is open to you.
Great. James.
Sure, James.
Yeah, so did this originate with Rod's initial materials from our last call, or where's this coming from?
This is from a collective set of ICANN staff minds who compiled the information that we had both from Rod's paper, but also from some of the public comments that were received and our understanding of what we think the issue is. So this is our first stab at the problem statement.
Okay, thank you.
Craig, this is Nacho.
Hi, Nacho.
Should this statement include something regarding how ICANN is going to deliver access to the zone files, or if it's going to be that way, or if it's going to be a third party?
So I think what your comment's speaking to is really the how, and I don't know necessarily whether that has to go into the problem statement. I think the problem statement is defining what the current challenge is, and then we get to solutions when we start sorting through the details and having more dialogue about it. Are there other folks that feel that Nacho's comment needs to be built into the problem statement?
Craig, this is John Christoph. Can you hear me okay?
Hi, John. Pardon me? I'm sorry, John, I didn't hear you.
Can you hear me okay? Sorry for being late.
Yeah, I can hear you.
I just have one comment about the problem statement. The way I read it, it almost sounds like you could kind of replace the zone file access agreement with something like registrars and registrants, although maybe the registrars don't give back a lot of data. I'm not sure this, from my perspective correctly, really captures the problem per se. I think there is a problem, but I think it's a little bit different in that, to rephrase where the scale issue is simply keeping up to date that relationship and making sure that access is still viable and that the contact information for the consumer is still correct and so forth.
Okay. Other comments, questions?
This is Rick Wilhelm. One comment that I would offer is that the second sentence says this is not scalable in an environment where there are many consumers and providers. I think that I would rephrase that sentence as something along the lines of the following: scaling the current model into an environment where there are many consumers and providers will have negative cost implications for consumers. For providers of data, scaling the new, providers really don't care, I would offer. And I think that more of the problem is on the consumer side, because the consumers are the ones who now have to go contact N different parties. Right now, producers are used to dealing with N different parties and have developed generally similar but subtly unique ways of handling all those things. So I think this is more of a consumer problem.
Okay.
This is Dawson.
This is Dave Fiscatello. Can I make or ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah. I think it's fairly fairly true that the problem's already been solved on the provider end, and that the benefit is heavily weighed towards the consumer. But it does seem to me that there is some merit to be had in only having to deal with one party as opposed to having to deal with many, and even at the fundamental firewall administration or server system administration level, there is a simplicity to be had in considering the proposal that Rob put together. So I wouldn't say that there's no benefit.
I would agree with your point, Dave, is that it wouldn't work. The current model doesn't work for consumers if we go forward. An alternative model would likely have some benefit to producers if we in the go forward.
Right.
Now, this is Rod. I agree with that last statement pretty much completely. I think that's the when I, if the, we'll talk about my paper in a little bit, but that's basically the conclusion I came to, I think.
This is John Christoph again. I have one other additional comment. I guess one of the questions I'd be curious to know if someone has an answer about is, has anyone, the providers, kind of done an audit of the consumers, whether those contacts are still accessing the data, when the last contact they've seen is, are those contacts even still available via the contact information they provided and so forth. I think that part of it, it may be easy to set up and maintain from a provider perspective, but I think that's part of the potential problem of the disparity that we currently have in the system.
As a consumer, I can tell you what the consumer experience is, and I do get at least annual, if not semi-annual, queries as to whether or not I'm going to continue to need access to the zone files that I have the privilege of downloading. So there is auditing on the part of. Or at least the TLD registries that I have access to. I suspect all of them do it to some degree. One interesting question that falls out of that is whether or not more frequent auditing and more granular auditing would be available if you had a centralized process, and whether that would against abuse.
Dave. When John came off mute, you cut out.
Okay. Apologies to those who heard it. I said that as a consumer, I know that I get at least annual, if not more frequent, requests as to whether or not I need continued access to the zone files that I have contracts for. So I think that there is auditing at some level, and my comment was, it's also useful to consider whether there would be some benefit to having a more regular, uniform, and perhaps more granular auditing, and whether that might allow us to curb either existing abuse or the potential for abuse.
I had one more quick thing. I think that all sounds good. As I'm also a consumer, and I think I've been followed up with once, so some standards in terms of auditing would be helpful.
I'm sorry, I was just speaking over somebody. Could you repeat your comment?
Sorry, Craig, this is John. I agree with everything that would have been said. The only thing I would add is, as also a consumer, I think I've been asked to provide an update just once from one TLD, and was a while ago. So some standards in the auditing process would probably be minimum helpful piece to add to that.
Now, there's not a representative from VeriSign in this advisory group, but I do know that they did an audit in the fall of all their zone file access agreements, and I'll follow up with them to see what information they're willing to make available to the group around the results of the audit. And I just want to let you know that a big registry is doing it, and we'll see what we can find out and share with the group.
And my experience is that these agreements generally have an annual expiration, which likely not coincidentally syncs with Dave's experience that he was talking about, where he gets contacted annually.
Hey, so this is Jothan, and I had a point after reading Rod's paper and just sort of looking at the problem statement. We have sort of a provincial, I think, attitude about what the zone file is, right? I mean, it's in a classical sense, it contains, glue records and a list of names and their name server and maybe a strata of authority. And we're going to see in the new TLD process, I have, some sort of creative new uses of the DNS, where we'll see perhaps the NAPTA records or text records or LOC records being used in some manner. And I wonder, when we talk about zone file, if we can somehow amend the statement to make sure that it's going to contain the right data, or, you know, maybe I'm failing to articulate this in the right way, but basically, you know, I think everything works off of the presumption of the zone files as they are now today. We may want to make this statement a little sort of future compatible and identify what's included in a zone file that gets provided into the system. So like .tel, for example, you know, does a lot of their efforts in NAPTR.
Yeah, this is Vladimir from .tel. NAPTR records are not included in the zone file because they belong to the second level domains.
Right. But they could.
They could, theoretically, yeah.
And we've got this.
That'd be awfully novel. I mean, technically they could, but that would be awfully novel.
This is Rod. I was just going to comment that we do have DNSSEC considerations there, too, I think. And I've heard that there's going to be some interesting new things that people are trying to do, at least from the entrepreneur side. So there may be an issue as to what data is being published. I don't know if it goes in the problem statement or not, but I think, you know, future proofing is not a bad idea if there's some way to do that.
Okay, well, there's been a lot of helpful discussion on the problem statement, and, you know, Mark and I will try and capture all the comments that folks made. But if you have specific language that you think should be added that would, you know, make it a better reflection of what we're trying to do, maybe you could just cut and paste it and redline it and just send it back to the group. It probably would only take you a minute or two, and then we'll compile it and recirculate something around. And we don't necessarily need to limit our work and our discussion just to these weekly phone calls. We can certainly do it on the list in between each call. So I'd like to close out the problem statement discussion and move on to item number 3, which is the community concerns review. And there are a number of items that are listed here that have primarily come out of the public comment from the registry stakeholder group. And I know we've got Vladimir on the phone, and I know that we've got Nacho. Are both of you prepared and are willing to go through those items? Did both of you contribute to that registry stakeholder group position statement?
I'm not sure. What did the registry stakeholder group statement say? Because I have not been tracking it.
Yeah, I'll read through some of the comments that they made. There are just a few that are summarized at the bottom of what they submitted in terms of public comment. The first one is, they're saying with the zone file access, it does not help with time-sensitive data since the data is only updated daily and not all registries will update on the same schedule. Therefore, it doesn't seem that this could help with phishing. So is there a real issue? And, you know, I'm asking the people who know about zone data, the zone files, and either from the vendor side or the consumer side, what is the real issue with timing, and specifically as it might relate to efforts to deal with and mitigate phishing? You know, Rick might know something about this. Rod, I'm sure does. Dave, you know, is there a real sensitivity around the timing, or is this not a significant issue?
Now, this is Rod. I could chime in on that since I use the zone files to find phishing sites. If we could get more rapid access to zone files, that would be helpful. But even in the current daily form, they're extremely useful in finding certain types of phishing activity, especially some of the, you know, and it goes to malware and other things like that too. It's not just phishing. but especially on the malware side, where these guys are trying to fly under the radar. You can use zone file data to connect the dots in many cases that you may not have access to because they don't publish on the internet for quite a while, but they do get published in the zone file. So it is very useful for being able to track down clusters of activity, whether it's malware, zone, phishing, what have you.
Are there other consumers of zone file data who can speak up to the timing issue?
So this is Jonathan. I can speak in behalf of as a former consumer from Domain Tools, and I'm trying to encourage the whois.sc people to participate in this group. But one of the pain areas was that there was no sort of unified time of expectation to know that there would be a fresh zone file available, that it could happen at any point during the day. Perhaps if there was some way to unify that, to say that a zone file must be updated by X time UTC.
Doesn't that fall into the area of registry agreement? I'm sorry, this is Dave. I'd ask Craig or the registry participants whether that would actually fall into the area of a registry agreement.
Yeah, I would have to look at what the obligation is in the respective registry agreements around timing. I'm just not that familiar with that level of detail. But I will look into it and get back.
Well, don't let that question is... Oh, sorry, John, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Real quick, just one other thing is I know some registries do make available their data in real time, and they actually get some revenue out of that, so that may be a conflict of interest.
This is Rod again, and I actually, in the paper that I presented, I wanted to make clear that I didn't want to make this a competition with the Rapid Zone Access that some people are providing. I consider that a registry service that's above and beyond. So my comment before was just that it would be useful, and hence that might be a very good revenue opportunity for some registries.
Well, I think everyone knows that VeriSign does provide the Rapid Zone updates, and we certainly would never do anything that would conflict with their approved registry service.
This is Kurt. Hey, let me get up. Hang on.
All right, so I'm going to move on to, and I'm going a little bit off the agenda here, but I'm going right to some of these public comments from the registry stakeholder group. It's a comment is establishing a standard interface requirement could meet users' needs to automate access to any number of TLD zone files. This actually didn't seem like a question. I'm not quite sure I understand it now that I'm reading it again. Another comment is, someone could already perform a similar service. Why not let someone develop the service on their own, and is there a real market demand for it? This would also allow development of specific tools and services to meet the needs of real zone file access users, filtering data, alerting, et cetera. And so I think it is interesting to raise the question of, why hasn't something like this been developed on its own in the marketplace? This kind of compilation of zone file data and then providing it in that means.
Well, I can respond to that. Some of the agreements you have to sign with these providers mandate that you not distribute it in a whole form.
Okay.
This is Rod. I'll second that. My impression is that I can't, as a consumer of that data, turn around and republish it. The other part of that would be that there are services, I'd say, that do part of that function, the whois.sc type of thing. But that's they're focused on different aspects. But in general, I think that this hasn't developed over time is because people are either prohibited or under the impression they were prohibited from doing so.
Okay. Well, I'm kind of feeling like we're going to need to revisit this particular agenda item simply because the folks that have been the most vocal are not on the call today. And I'd like to move that we revisit this on the next call and move on to a brief discussion by Rod of the paper that he circulated. Is everyone in the group okay with that?
Yep.
Okay. Rod, I'll turn the floor over to you for about 10 minutes.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. I sent out a paper. I've actually been working on this on and off since the Seoul meeting, and tried to capture some of the things, especially from the consumer side, but also some of the concerns I'd heard about why this is even an issue in the first place. So, I think it pretty much speaks for itself. I do a background about how the system is set up currently. Take a look at then dividing up what the viewpoint of a consumer versus a producer is as far as the process they have to go through, the challenges, et cetera, of the kind of the current system, and then also take a look at what that looks like under an expanded system. Pointing out that you've got this current, what we've already discussed, everybody who's on the consumer side has to put up some sort of way of getting this in a slightly different fashion from pretty much everybody that's out there. And from the producer side, you've got something that you're not really being compensated for, but you're required to do, and you've got to manage, in theory, a bunch of different consumers of data and provide security and access and all that kind of good stuff. As I go into the, what we're facing, if we're getting, hundreds of new registries, that's a couple order of magnitude change in the way things are going, at least from the producer side. Get into a couple of different models potentially for some sort of unified access model. Those are ones that just, come to mind fairly naturally. My purpose here was to get a couple of ideas out there, not necessarily to say this is the way we should have to do this or something like that. But the two different models are, kind of two different themes in the same idea of having a centralized organization of some sort. That I was very agnostic as to whether that's ICANN or a nonprofit or some sort of company that's doing something. That's up to the community to decide, in my opinion. And in response to a couple of people asked me, I have no commercial interest in actually doing this at all. So I want to declare that right now. I really have no desire to run such a thing. And I think it's also important to, if there was a company, organization, or what have you that was chosen to do this, that you'd create some sort of a firewall between that data aggregator, or whatever it is, and any other commercial interest they may have, whether it's trademark research or phishing mitigation or whatever it is. If there's a company that's actually using this data for some reason and wants to run something like this, that you would firewall it, kind of like you saw when the registrar thing was being firewalled at VeriSign or something like that. Anyways, that was a couple of people that asked me about that stuff. The two models were, one have, get the data collected centrally and then provided to the, collected centrally from the registries and perhaps standardized and then made available to the consumers. That central entity would be responsible for security, keeping contracts up to date, making audits, all that kind of stuff. So it relieves that from registries having to do that themselves. But the registries would be given the rights to audit and and all that kind of thing that they want to do to be able to control access to their data. The other model is kind of that you'd have the central organization managing the administrative stuff and providing security, but do some sort of a proxy model back to the registries if the registries want to maintain the data themselves and not have that sent to a centralized resource. But basically create an interface that is secured and all that in a back channel through VPN or something like that back to the registries. So there's a couple different models, and you know, there's merits and drawbacks to both, I think. In the bulk of the paper, I kind of go into, you know, what the benefits are of doing that. And I make mention to, we don't want to change or have an effect on enhanced registry services like we were just talking about. And I also think there's a potential here if you have a central or unified point of contact for getting this thing, that you can actually use this potentially as a conduit for enhanced services. And I think that was actually gets to that point in the registry's comments there, is that you could actually see, I would think, if you make it easier for people to use and work with the data, they may want more. That's my tendency. I've seen that in many fields. So there may be an opportunity for many registries to provide enhanced data services, which may be paid for services through this conduit. So I think there's an opportunity for expansion here as well. And that pretty much is the run through of the paper. I've got some conclusions here, but basically they're just going over that. Here's the situation. Here's what people face today, and here's some of the challenges we see going forward, and a couple of different models for handling it. And I do want to thank Dave Piscatella for helping me understand several of these security issues. I bounced off of him as I was writing this up, and he helped me think about that proxy model as well. I think it's a different solution that has some good merit. So that's about it. I'm happy to take any questions. If I've already fielded a couple just kind of offline on it already, but if there were comments or questions, I'd love to hear them and make this better, or use this as a baseline for, not a baseline, but as a major input for putting something together going forward.
This is Rick Wilhelm. I think this is really nicely done. I mean, there's got a couple of comments here and there, but it's a really good, crisp, solid analysis that's pretty comprehensive. I think it's real solid, and thanks for putting the effort in to write it up. I know it's a lot of work.
Thanks.
This is Dave.
Go ahead, Dave.
I heard a couple people trying to chime in. I know one was Dave, and who was the other one? John?
I don't know, it was Mikey, but I'll go second.
Yeah, Mikey.
I was mostly going to echo the last comments and also say, Rod, that you might want to drop a few of your little pictures in, because I think one of the things that makes this argument much easier to understand is the graphics that you put together of the scaling problem. So that's my only suggestion.
As far as other, this is Rick again, another ad that I would throw in is some, and maybe this is sort of was purposefully reserved for a later version of it, but some analysis of the trade-offs between two models, just a table or some other mechanism to sort of identify some of the puts and takes on the models. I think to those kind of familiar with this, those would come quickly to mind, but I think it'd be interesting to try and get a solid catalog of those.
Yeah, this is Dave Piscatella. One of the things I wanted to point out, I don't like to presume that people aren't familiar with the two models. But in my prior life, consulting for secure extranets and intranets was a huge part of my consulting, and the proxy model that I described here, we actually implemented at the OECD and at DuPont, largely because they had a very similar problem. In the case of DuPont, One of the things that we wanted to try to do is provide a common portal for a large number of customers, into a large number of business units and segments, and we were able to do that. In the OECD, one of the things that we wanted to do was provide a common portal for for somewhere in the order of 80,000 consumers of OECD information. And on the back end of that were, all the different directorates that the OECD operates that, range from mining and agriculture to technology to, other economic interests. And each of those had their own sort of fiefdom of information. And trying to put a scenario in where there wasn't a need for and it would be very, very problematic to create a common data repository was essential. So it just seemed like a useful fit, and that there's an awful lot of interesting security measures that you can add when you start to use a proxy in this fashion. I Mike had mentioned graphics. One of the things that I'd be happy to help Rod include is a picture of the different architectures, and that also helps tease out some of the trade-offs because it illustrates where the data lie. So I think I can also satisfy Rick's comment as well.
Are there other comments or questions around Rod's paper? Okay, well, I see we've got just a little bit more than 5 minutes left in the call, and I really would like to keep these to an hour. I appreciate how busy everyone is and what time of the morning it is for some folks on the call. What was moved down to item number 5 on the agenda, this data collection requirement, something that a few of us had talked about internally is there data that we either already have or could collect that is from zone file access providers that would help us understand the scale of the issue, but also some of the malicious conduct type issues. And what I mean by that is one of the concerns we've heard voiced by some of the registries is that if they're not in charge or controlling the access to zone file data, and there's some malicious conduct going on, that how will they have an assurance that it will either be addressed properly or addressed promptly enough to mitigate the issue? So how I bring this back to data collection is I'm wondering if there's value to this, and I'd be curious to hear what the group says, is to look at of the zone file access agreements that vendors sign with customers. I think it'd be interesting to know how many are terminated because of malicious conduct or abuse, or how many repeat offenders there might be if an offender is actually granted zone file access again. Not only the numbers, but with the frequency. Does this happen? Does it happen once a month? Does it happen once a quarter? Does it happen 5 times a quarter? So there may be some value to having this kind of information to understand what the real scale of the problem is. In terms of the numbers of zone file access agreements that registries have with consumers, that information is public because it's part of the monthly operator report that they provide that's posted on the ICANN website. So we already do have a good piece of data in understanding that there are several thousand zone file access agreements across 16 TLDs. So I would like to have a few minutes discussion on this zone, this data collection, and see what people think about that, the value, what kind of data we might seek, et cetera.
Okay, so Craig,
yes.
I'll let Mikey go, but I'd like to speak after.
Okay.
Oh, go ahead, Doug.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Mikey. The it would be interesting to know, for the purposes of what we're doing, maybe some, even if they're just astronaut view of the categories, like the purposes that these are used for, to better understand what these consumers are looking for. So what I mean is this purely data research? You know, what are some of the purposes this data is used for? The other comment that I have is currently there's no transparency as to who the consumers are necessarily, unless you're one of the registries that have these legacy agreements. So, you know, what I mean is Rod stood up and he's a consumer of this data, but there's no transparency as to knowing who the consumers of these data are if you're not one of the current players. And, you know, if that's something we'd like to preserve going forward, that there is not necessarily that transparency, it might be shared between ICANN and the providers, but it may not necessarily be publicly listed. But that might be something we want to make sure gets preserved. There may be consumers, for example, that would not want their information published.
Right. Mikey, did you have something to add?
I think Jonathan's comments are good ones. I hadn't thought about that. I was mostly going to speak in favor of the notion of collecting data. I'm a big believer in that which gets measured gets done, and getting us out of the realm of anecdotal seems like a really good idea to me. So if you're looking for a sense of the group, at least from my perspective, I think gathering some data would be a great idea.
So sure, collecting data it might be a good idea. I think it'd also be good to know what data do you feel would be useful to have. And Jonathan just raised a couple of items, and I certainly did, around, you know, those who are identified as abusers of zone file data, or, you know, the malicious, you know, the bad actor folks. What other data could be helpful to this conversation and to the work we're trying to do?
This is Mikey again. Let me just follow up on that. I think one of the questions, and it will be very hard data to collect, but would be useful to know, is the nature of the problem that consumers and providers have. We've speculated, and I think very well in Rod's paper, that there are a number of issues that both consumers and providers have. It would be nice to get some data to verify whether those are in fact true. I was a one-time consumer of the .com zone file, and after a couple of gigabyte download later, that was the end of my interest in pursuing that ever again. And so one of the things that might be interesting is to see what customer satisfaction is with the current system and suggestions for improvement, but I have no clue on how you gather that data.
So can I put you on the spot for a moment?
Sure.
So you said you downloaded it a couple of times, but then the gigabyte volume caused you to stop doing that. What was the reason you sought some zone file data?
I was simply trying to figure out whether a certain string existed in the zone file and how often. So I dumped it into my SQL database and searched for that string and counted them. So I was doing very basic, I guess you'd just call it research against the file.
Okay.
To answer a question, and to the extent that somebody had a service where I could have just queried that string against their database, it would have saved me a lot of bandwidth.
Is it possible? I think I have a presumptive answer on this one, but do you think there's any likelihood that the incumbent registry providers might survey their current zone file access users, or have some form of survey they may have performed that they would share?
Good question.
Craig, I seem to recall that VeriSign survey asked you what you were doing with the data, but I'm not positive on that. It was long enough ago, I've forgotten.
Hey, Craig, this is Rick. I'm going to have to drop off. I apologize. I have a 11:30 hard stop.
We're over a few minutes anyway. Thanks, Rick.
Okay, thank you.
Jonathan, could you say a little bit more about the survey?
Oh, Rod actually participated in the survey.
No, I'm sorry. We your thoughts are on
what it would contain?
Industry operator survey access their consumers.
So if you were to put out some requests to the registries that do offer zone file access currently, as to, you know, could they pull their users in their next communication, you know, hopefully shortly, as to, you know, maybe just at a very high level, what do they use the zone file for? I think, you know, if it didn't have to contain anything proprietary, it might be, what do you look for, what needs to be contained in a zone file access?
Okay.
I'm just trying to reason out between my own ears if that's something that they would participate in or not, but it seems like it would be very constructive for what we're doing.
This is John. I'm just looking at an email that I got. Looks like from September, I think it was from VeriSign. There was really no survey. It was just an inquiry as to if I still wanted to renew access. There may have been something else that I missed, but that's what I see.
Yeah, that was probably part of the audit that I referenced really early in the call. But I know VeriSign did to kind of clean up their zone file access agreements file. And I'll check with them to see what they might be willing to let us share around that. But I'm guessing that's probably one and the same.
Craig, this is Brian Q from Philly. Sorry, I just joined at the half hour. Couldn't join until later. I'm happy to check with affiliates and see what our current practice is and see whether that sort of an inquiry would be feasible.
Thanks, Brian. That would be helpful.
Sure.
Glad you could join, Brian.
Thank you.
And this is Barry Cobb. I'm just curious, who do we think is the largest consumer of zone file data out there? Would they not be a good resource for understanding, you know, what really does work and what doesn't? If I were to guess, I would say it's probably domain tools.
Well, there are a number of services like that. I can't speak for them in a current capacity, but they definitely are a large consumer. But I believe there are other providers doing something similar. I'd say that there are registrars and name suggestion technologies who use the zone files sort of as a front-end cache to determine the availability of names to reduce the burden on the EPP system. So there's a variety of uses out there. I don't know that we'll necessarily see one provider being the super consumer. I'll definitely encourage them to come onto the group, though.
Yeah, we should continue to encourage, you know, volunteers to participate who can contribute to this conversation with, you know, experience either on the consumer or the provider end. You know, we've got a number of registries, but it does seem like it might make sense to have a few more consumers, and if there are larger consumers, I think that would be particularly helpful. So I see that it's we're now about 10 minutes over. So I would like to make a couple of comments and then just close the call. I do want to reiterate the outreach to existing registry operators to perhaps step up and serve as a co-chair to this group. I know, Vladimir, that you said you were going to follow up with PIR and affiliates. You wanted to talk to them about this. So we'll maybe look for some email traffic on this subject the next couple of days. I would like to schedule a call with Rod and James probably sometime on Tuesday to discuss the next agenda and, you know, where we go forward with the next call. Just a reminder that next week's call will move back to its regularly scheduled time on Thursdays at 15:30 UTC. This week, having the call on Friday was just a one-time experience. I think too that based upon today's conversation, we could probably go ahead and post the MP3 recording. I don't know that we discussed anything that was particularly sensitive or might be of a concerning nature. Is there any opposition to making available today's conversation?
Well, I think the only thing that we discussed that would be as the security guy, I'm obliged to say that we discussed three things that have potential sensitivity. One is we discussed the fact that we were going to be discussing things that were potentially sensitive.
Okay.
Which, silly, right? But you have to you start at basic principles. The second is that we actually did discuss some aspects of the architecture that we have under consideration. Now I don't know whether you posted Rod's document about the pros and cons and the different models. So if that's already posted, then the horse is out of the barn.
Now, Rod's the presentation that Rod gave in the first the kickoff call, we did post that. If you're talking about this last paper he circulated this week, and we haven't posted that.
If you hadn't posted it because I want to make certain that we don't that we create the widest comfort zone possible for the registries.
Right.
I would suggest that we don't post it, and I would suggest that since we did discuss it during this session, that we either trim that out or just withhold the MP3 for a while. I know I'm being much more cautious than perhaps you're accustomed, Craig. I just want to make certain that we don't go really far down into an effort here and we have some misgivings from any of the registries that we haven't been really attentive to their need and I think an appropriate one, to keep their business processes,
That's fair, Dave. I appreciate that.
This is Mikey. It was posted to the list. If the list is public, then Rod's...
Well, you're right. The paper was, as Rod emailed it to the group, which goes into the public archive.
Yeah, so it's out there.
Someone's going to have to really be monitoring the list and looking for it. It's not like it's right on the information page, in plain view.
Yeah, this is Rod. I don't think there's really any state secrets in there either. Only proposed models and from a from some wild-eyed kook out in Tacoma who doesn't know what he's talking about.
So it may very well be of value for us to have a 2-minute conversation at the end of each call to discuss whether or not we post the MP3 or not. And while Rod's paper is public to the mailing list, I've heard some reservation about today's MP3, and hearing any reservation, I'm completely comfortable not posting, and I think that probably is the safer approach to go with than, erring on the side of complete freedom. So hearing no further comments or questions, again, thank you for your time this morning. We could certainly circulate the MP3 to the group, just not through the mailing list. I'll have to figure out how to do that. So you at least have the benefit of it, and the members who were not part of the call can have the benefit of the conversation. And we will get you an agenda for the next call sometime, early to midweek next week. I envision going forward that Rod and James, or Rod and whoever might be the other co-chair, if that should happen to change, would largely be driving the discussion and the dialogue in the meetings with me fully providing the support and Dave providing the support that the group needs. And I think Rod and Dave and James and I can work that out on a call on Tuesday. Just want to make sure that everybody is comfortable with the process going forward and that we all continue to get value out of what we're trying to do here together. So hearing no further comments, thank you for your time today. Have a great rest of your Friday, or if you're already into Saturday, have a good weekend.
Okay, take care.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.